Now, new research is rekindling the debate over the nutritional benefits of eggs. A study from Northwestern University found that looked at the health histories of 30,000 adults found that those who ate 2 eggs a day were at a 27% higher risk for heart disease. 3 years ago, however, the federal government loosened its guidelines for dietary cholesterol found in foods like eggs. So what's the healthy answer, and how should we sort through nutritional studies that seem to recommend different things? Thomas Sherman is a professor of pharmacology and physiology at Georgetown University Medical Center. Tom, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Let's start with eggs before we move into wider issues of how we sort out what's out there in the media. This Northwestern study found, all right, higher risk for heart disease for people eating a couple eggs a day. Researchers noted eggs weren't necessarily the cause of that. What was your reaction looking at that study?
Well, I was fairly surprised because, you know, there are several factors that enter into something like this. And I thought that we had sort of moved past talking about cholesterol, but in fact we haven't, and it's a complicated topic. And I think eggs in particular are of interest to people because they're widely consumed, and they really are one of the highest concentrating forms of cholesterol in the diet. So I think that's why there's as much focus on them as there is.
I'll say, as someone in the media, one of those common complaints I hear about media and science reporting is the eggs. And what are we supposed to do? We hear they're good, they're bad. What's your takeaway for now? You're not, as I understand it, running home and throwing your eggs in the garbage.
No, I'm not. But I think this study does give pause. It's actually among these types of studies. It's a pretty good study. It's fairly comprehensive. It's much, much longer term than other studies, which I think plays into part of the strength of it. But it does give pause. It's not a huge increased risk in heart disease, but given that heart disease is the number one killer of Americans, you know, I think it is something that people should pay attention to. And so that's why I think it's important. It contributes to one of the more frequent causes of death in this country.
It seems complicated, though. Eggs are one of many substances we as humans eat, and eating is just one of our many behaviors that can have an impact on health. How hard is it to tease out what one food or another might do when it comes to something like heart risk?
It's very difficult. It really is. And there are so many factors that play into heart disease. I mean, really, there's body weight, there's exercise, there's saturated fat, there's genetic background risks. There are just so many things you can do to decrease your risk, so many things that increase your risk, and diet is just one of them. And so I think looking at eggs as a primary cause of heart disease is just not accurate. But looking at eggs as a contributing factor in a society where heart disease is essentially an epidemic, I think it's an important issue to talk about.
A reaction I sometimes hear from people when we have back and forth studies on the same kind of food is they throw their hands up and say, okay, I don't care. I give up on the science. I give up on following the stuff. I'll just eat what I want. Do you think there's a way that people in the media can present this stuff that's a little less flabbergasting for people?
I mean, there really, really is. And it's one of the more difficult things I do when I talk to my medical students. You know, I'm very sympathetic. I'm very sympathetic with the public. I'm actually sympathetic with the media, because it isn't an easy thing to communicate. I mean, part of the issue and part of what's going on in cases like this is that doing human nutrition research is very, very challenging. I just can't overemphasize that enough. I mean, we're not an inborn strain of mice. We're not a group of animals that we can give a defined diet to for many years at a time. And so we really try to gather research in the best way that we can. And that's typically, unfortunately, questionnaires, dietary recall, which are all extremely fallible mm-hmm. and inaccurate. Wives overestimate how much their husbands eat. Husbands underestimate how much their wives eat. People can't remember what they ate yesterday, let alone last month. And so there is a lot of error in these kinds of studies. And so what these epidemiologists do, and this is a very responsible group of epidemiologists, is they just try to introduce controls and corrections and models to try to tease as much as possible the contributions of eggs.
Talking to Thomas Sherman from the Georgetown University Medical Center, looking at the latest in the story of eggs, a study from Northwestern saying, hey, wait a minute, regular eating of a couple eggs a day could boost your heart risk. And also more generally, how to interpret information, health and nutrition information, sometimes when we see what appear to be contradictory studies. Thomas, there is, as you were saying, a lot of gray area. We're still trying to figure out these difficult things. That said, though, are there some things in the nutrition world that we just know rock solid pretty much for sure that maybe we should be paying more attention to?
You know, I agree with that completely. I think that listening to what your mother told you and that eating a plant-based diet is really the way to approach. That doesn't mean you have to be a vegetarian, but it does mean that the bulk of your calories, the bulk of your fiber really should be coming sort of following a Mediterranean-style diet. And that doesn't mean a Mediterranean-style diet. It means it can be applied to almost any ethnic or religious or national cuisine, where it's a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, lean meats, seafood, vegetable and polyunsaturated fats, and that is, in fact, lower in saturated fat and cholesterol. You know, I mean, that's sort of the gold standard, and there is a lot of room in that for accommodating comfort foods. There's a lot of room in that for accommodating individual tastes. I mean, one of the, I think, important things that I actually frequently say to my students is that, you know, it doesn't really matter if you're on an Atkins diet or a paleo diet or if you're vegan or South Beach diet or vegetarian or anything like that. Because all of those diets are much more similar to each other than they are to the typical American diet that is very heavily burdened with ultra-processed foods and sugars. All of these other diets encourage you to cook. They encourage you to limit sugar. They encourage you to eat basic whole foods. And therefore, we should spend less time critiquing each other's fad diet and spend more time learning to cook and buying ingredients for food instead of allowing corporations to cook for us and fast food restaurants to cook for us.
And you mentioned sugar. We're probably never going to see that major study that says, yeah, you should probably be drinking more soda every day.
No, you're not going to see that study. I mean, that's something, again, that's pretty hard and fast. We do eat too much sugar, and it isn't as complicated a food as eggs. I think one of the issues with eggs, and part of the reason why people are so attracted to it, is that cholesterol is just a very complicated physiology in our bodies, and that foods that contain cholesterol are also foods that frequently contain saturated fats. They're all animal foods. And teasing out the impact of saturated fats versus dietary cholesterol and other choices that people make that impact their heart health is just very, very difficult. But sugar is pretty straightforward. And in fact, sugar is really the only food group that is unambiguously associated with excessive weight gain. And that's not really true for any other food, although pizza is going to soon be added to that list, I think.
Pizza so, specifically?
Yeah, pizza. We just eat too much pizza. And it's not that I'm not a fan of good pizza. It's just that people eat too much of it. So it's interesting. Sugar and these sort of very calorically dense foods, we just eat too much of.
We're talking to Thomas Sherman, professor of pharmacology and physiology at Georgetown University. Our starting point, we're looking at nutritional research in light of a recent study on eggs and their relationship, their potential relationship with high cholesterol and heart disease, but moreover, how to look at dueling nutritional information and make smart food choices. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you ever feel confused or exhausted by the amount of nutritional recommendations we see in the news? Maybe on different sources like social media? Have you changed your diet based on a new study? Have you made it a point to limit foods that are higher in cholesterol, things like eggs? What questions do you have for our guest about nutrition, food research, how it's done, and what we as food eaters should do with all this information? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Thomas Sherman, professor of pharmacology and physiology at Georgetown University Medical Center, about nutrition, nutritional research, and how to make sense of what we see in the media when it comes to foods that are good or bad to eat. You can join in at 800-642-1234. When new studies or food recommendations come out, do you pay attention to them? Do they guide your food choices? What questions do you have about making sense of what you see in the news when it comes to food, or what you see on social media when it comes to food? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom, before we go to our callers, do you think we get too obsessed with trying to find either the superfood or the super villain food? I mean, a lot of the stuff you see on social media is always eat or don't eat blank.
You know, it's really true, and probably a week doesn't go by when somebody doesn't contact me wanting me to discuss some new superfood. And superfoods are typically defined as some new food that is particularly rich in some ingredient, a vitamin, an antioxidant, a protein, or something like that. And they just don't really exist. And that, yes, there are foods that people should enjoy eating. There are foods that we should include in our diet. But there's no magic. There's just no magic in it. And we shouldn't focus on one ingredient when, in fact, a food can contain hundreds, if not thousands, of specific ingredients. And so by pretending that one ingredient is more important, we're sort of corrupting and exaggerating how much we really know about food.
Let's go to our callers now. Brian is with us in Madison. Brian, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Brian.
I recently read a book by, I'm not sure how to pronounce the name, but it's Nina Teichholz, called The Big Fat Surprise.
Yes.
And she talks about how kind of the initial studies about the correlation between saturated fat and cholesterol by Ansel Keys were sort of based on a couple of really flawed experiments that then, and studies that then people kind of repeated. And I mean, the book is a little bit sort of develops like this cult following Ansel Keys did, but I was just sort of curious, like, she really lays out a lot of arguments against the fact that saturated fat and cholesterol are even bad for us at all.
Brian, thanks for the call. Yeah, there's been a lot of back and forth about various kind of fats, saturated fats. What do you think, Tom?
Well, Nina has a real conflict of interest in pushing a hypothesis or a theory just to sell more books. She's part of a revisionist history group that is trying to disparage Ansel Keys, who is actually a fairly responsible epidemiologist, a neighbor of Wisconsin over there in Minnesota. And yeah, it wasn't a perfect study, but it was really one of the first international epidemiology studies that highlighted the impact of diet on cardiovascular disease. And there are many ways in which that study could have gone, but one thing which is unambiguously true is that whereas saturated fats are very complicated, there's no evidence that they're beneficial, and that in many cases, especially in regards to cholesterol, there's a clear molecular mechanism by which saturated fats increase circulating cholesterol, and therefore they are, in fact, a real risk factor for heart disease. And And it's just not a responsible take for her to take. But it is a big topic of conversation among many scientists and lay people.
I think among the public, there ended up being a backlash against fat, period, all kinds of fat. Are there good fats, I guess, is my question.
So poly and monounsaturated fats, meaning those fats that are found in fish oils and in vegetables and the like, really are shown to not only decrease blood pressure, but decrease cholesterol. And those are the fats which we need to eat more of as a nation and as a people. They are, those are the kinds of things you want to eat, foods that are rich in these leafy green vegetables, fish, things like that. And that, yes, everything that has fat has saturated fat in it. So I don't want to pretend like saturated fat is poison or anything, but you want the ratio of fats to sort of favor these unsaturated fats that help cardiovascular health and help blood pressure and decrease inflammation and things like that. So that's what we really should try to do. And instead of focusing on saturated fat, there's not a conspiracy out there to prevent us from eating saturated fat. We eat plenty of it.
Talking to Thomas Sherman, professor of pharmacology and physiology at Georgetown University Medical Center, about how to make sense of dueling studies, dueling nutrition information, what we see in the media, and what it means for what we actually eat and drink. We'll go back to your calls now. Joan is on the line in Eau Claire. Joan, hello.
Good afternoon. My question is about the studies that indicate that the French, who drank a lot of red wine with their meal, supposedly the flavonoids in the red wine bind with the fat of red meat or whatever and dispense that from the body. I'm curious about the doctor's opinion on that or feelings on that. And then also the grape juice. Can grape juice be substituted for red wine?
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. Tom, this is another one of the stories that we've seen again and again over the years. What are the benefits of different kinds of alcohol, red wine in particular? What are your thoughts on what Joan brought up there?
So this so-called French paradox has been around for a long time. It's really interesting, but it isn't going to be due to necessarily ingredients in red wine. There is one ingredient called resveratrol, which has gotten a lot of attention, although its efficacy in humans has really been zero. But in animal studies, it can be interesting. Actually, I think the best explanation of the French paradox is that they do in moderation what many of us do to excess, in that they eat smaller portions, they eat much more slowly, they eat much more socially, and that, in fact, in certain cases, alcohol consumption can also decrease cardiovascular disease risk. I mean, that's another topic that's complicated, but alcohol consumption, when done in moderation, can be very beneficial. So I don't think, again, that there's a specific ingredient that you can point to that is beneficial, although alcohol itself as an ingredient can be beneficial when it's done in moderation. And like you said earlier, many things in moderation are very beneficial.
Joan, thanks a lot for that call. Tom, I want to get into our national nutritional guidelines. I know you've been concerned about corporate influence on those guidelines in the past. One thing I read in an older blog post of yours, we specify good stuff to eat, maybe specific fruits and vegetables, but we specify ingredients, sugar, rather than naming names when it comes to products. Can you talk about that?
It's really true, and that industry does have an excessive influence over the dietary guidelines, and as we prepare for the 2020 dietary guidelines, I mean, the meat industry, the sugar industry, many of these corporate lobbying groups are just too influential. And it actually is contributing to this cholesterol. There's a value for corporations to create confusion, because when you create confusion, then people feel like they need to rely on experts. And on the internet, everybody is an expert. And so rather than just using common sense and eating small portions and eating a plant-based diet, They look for something magical. And it's, you're exactly right, that when we want people to eat something, we'll say, eat fruits, eat vegetables. But when we don't want them to eat something, these industries prevent us from saying, don't eat as much sugar, don't eat red meat, you know, those sorts of things. Instead, they say, limit saturated fat, limit, you know, sucrose. You know, many people don't even know what sucrose is or what a saturated fat is or what foods contain saturated fat. And many countries have these very common sense dietary guidelines where they'll say, look at this plate. This represents a healthy portion size. This represents good foods. And you want to limit red meat and you want to drink in moderation and these sorts of things. And these corporate influences really prevent that. And they do the same with cholesterol because they don't want you to avoid red meat. And the egg industry doesn't want you to limit egg consumption. So it's in their interest to create confusion.
We'll leave it there for now. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Good questions, everybody. And there's a million more out there.
All right. Thomas Sherman is a professor of pharmacology and physiology at Georgetown University Medical Center. He was with us to talk about nutritional research in light of a new study suggesting eggs might be linked to higher cholesterol and heart disease, a complicated issue to sort out. And he helped us sort out what to make of studies like this when we see them in the news.